You were talking.
I can be thought out. So we asked for a meeting with Governor Rockefeller to discuss this, and we obtained such a meeting. The governor brought in Norm Herb, budget director, and other people. And Charlie and I and several others went there. And in the pitch they made to the governor, in effect said, that, look, these are the problems and the difficulties that were facing us. These are time-consuming. They're delaying us in accomplishing what we know is your program to make the State University move ahead swiftly and reflect credit upon you and your administration. We can't do this in the time frame that we're struggling with. We can't do this in the process of being second-guessed and having all these checkpoints to go through. Something has to happen. Something has to give. It cannot exist this way. Therefore, I would propose that we have some way developed to free the university from all of these normal things which the budget office applies generally to state departments and agencies that doesn't fit our framework. And the governor turned and said to Norm Herb, Norm, you know, is there anything wrong with that? Well, right away I knew that Norm wasn't going to say to the governor, yes, there's something wrong with that. The budget office ought to continue to do the delaying process, or the checking process, which was delaying what we were talking about. And so the governor said, Norm, supposing you and Larry get together and you agree upon something which solves the problems that they have. So coming from that, we had a number of meetings and agreed upon a memorandum of understanding between the State University and the Budget Office, which literally freed the State University from all of its...
Where would I be likely to find that memorandum? Whose files would that be in? That be in the Chancellor's files now, or the Trustee's files?
It would more likely be in the Chancellor's files.
You understand?
Charlie Foster might remember specifically. But it in context, what it says probably would be difficult to understand unless you were at that moment in time relating it to the things that were happening.
Right.
Subsequent to that time, after Larry Murray, the budget eroded this agreement back to the point where the university was again being fettered by the budget office's determinations. And I think although there may have been some relaxation in the past several years, since they brought in a big name study committee to look at this problem, I think that there may have been some relaxation of it, but in effect, the relaxation that has taken place is, as I'm under the impression, hasn't yet gone to the point that we had it under this memorandum of understanding with the governor.
My feeling when I was acting there at Stony Brook was that the institution, and one yardstick, is the amount of money available for the purchase of books for the library. The book purchase funds placed Stony Brook to the top 20 or 25 universities in the country in the amount of money that was available for purchase of books at the time. And I was proud of being able to say that. I think the faculty felt at the time that the financial support was in line with what they, let's say the Hill Report, said Stony Brook should stand with the finest in the country. At that time, money was there for the purposes that were articulated.
Well, one of the things that happened also, which shook the budget office somewhat, I made the conclusion that there was no reason that I could see why bond funds couldn't be used to buy test tubes, laboratory equipment, couldn't be used to buy artwork, books, just as well as build buildings. And the issue was raised in a situation at Binghamton where we built a beautiful fine arts building, and there was nothing in the appropriation for equipping it. And I said, well, this is ridiculous. How can you invest money in the construction of a beautiful fine arts building that is related to the faculty's needs for this program, and then not provide the artwork, the sculptures, the photographs, the paintings, the cataloging of items, the importation of various learning materials that are necessary to teach? So I said, bingo, we're going to do that. Well, I won that argument too with the budget office, because even though it was precedent setting, there was no defense against that. You cannot say that, and this was my posture, but you cannot say that the buildings of the university should be constructed on a timetable very much accelerated because of the availability of bonding monies and financing monies through the student tuition program. And at the same time, the state appropriations which were being made for equipping the buildings were going to be lagging behind because the state tax dollars couldn't measure up to the bonding fund. I said, that's stupid. And, you know, I had a few unacademic phrases that I attached to a lot of things, stupid being one of them. It covers a multitude of things, you know.
Well, I know that in the case of the buildings that were being built at Stony Brook, they went with an equipment budget.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which made good sense.
Yeah, sure makes sense. Sure makes sense.
We had a hard time with the purchase and delivery and setting up of that equipment. And one of the appointments I made fairly early was of a chap who came right in off the street. He just retired from the Scoville manufacturer. I mean, he was an MIT man. And he wanted to be useful. He lived out very close to us, Myron Doucette. And he became my assistant for scientific procurement. And he would ferret down the purchase orders and see where there was a blockage in the pipeline going from the university to the contractor, or the contractor back out to the mm-hmm. campus.
Mm-hmm.
So he was an invaluable chap.
Well, yeah, he had somebody writing here in that way. Yeah, right.
Well, let's see. Tell me a little bit about the lease situation.
Well, I don't remember very much about the John Lee and in that situation. When I read that question early on, I it's the first that his name popped into my head. I've only been under the impression, as my recollection is just some vague impression, that it was a completely unsatisfactory arrangement. But I can't recall the facts of that or what occurred.
Ellis was in town Hamilton, so.
This was in town Hamilton, I commenced.
Yeah.
And much of the detail of that sort of thing I had relinquished. It involved then Hamilton and John Slocum, and I was concentrated more in all these other activities.
What was Slocum's position?
Well, at that time, he was then the vice president for administration. And he subsequently was let go because of some personal problem.
Yeah. Well, I've talked to some of our faculty who were back in those days, and what they say was that after the Heald report, Lee took that. He came in after the Heald report, actually. I think he came in 60, early in 60, and was let go late in 60. 60, 61, anyway. That he took that seriously, asked for more money than he actually was able to spend, and consequently that was lost. And he fired Olson, and then was himself fired. It's in the total picture, it's not a large item, except that the altercation with Hamilton and the trustees got into the newspapers in New York, and people picked it up, and there was the feeling on the part of these faculty members that that was one of the things that put Stony Brook in the public view. The question as to what it was going to become and how important and so on.
Well, it probably represented a negative period in the development and growth of Stony Brook, which had been so positive in so many ways. I'm not sure. I recall that the State University trustees were pressing for there to be an appointment of an individual to head up the program down at the Poa State, a president who was to be the president at Stony Brook, and that there was pressure to get somebody. I recall several times there being reports made by the committee that was doing this, or the group that was doing this, that they were interviewing people and they were making decisions, etc.
Was this the council, the local council, or was this at the trustees?
Well, the local council had some recommendation responsibility, but it was basically the Slocum, as I recall, because Stony Brook was one of his responsibilities in a sense. And the trustees who were involved with him, but here again I'm vague because I don't recall specifically, except I do recall that trust to get somebody. You know? Sometimes that's not the wisest thing in the world. The university went through its own problems with the trust of getting somebody because of. Sometimes criticism publicly that there isn't an identifiable leader. You know? I remember when I was named the acting president of the university system, and I chose the designation acting chief administrative officer because it enabled, in my opinion, it enabled all the faculty to be comfortable with the fact that they had a non-academic person who was an administrative officer, not a president.
Was this after Hamilton?
And this was after Hamilton. Then I got the whole ball of wax because the board was saying, well, you've been doing it anyway. But I remember the Albany Times Union wrote an editorial, and their editorial writer at that time was a fellow named Dan Button. Button was Carlson's public relations officer and executive assistant when Carlson was a president. And Button was one of the first to go because the trustees were probably more antagonistic toward him than they were toward Carlson for whatever reasons. And he wrote an editorial that said that that I was totally unqualified for this responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. And which prompted Mayor Corning from Albany, Erastus Corning, called me and said that, Larry, you've been libeled. You've been libeled, and he said, I want to tell you that you have been libeled, and I want to offer you one of our attorneys to represent you to bring an action against the Times Union. I said, well, I think I've been libeled too, but that's a matter of opinion. What happens to me personally is unimportant. What happens to the university is really what's important. The university doesn't need any publicity surrounding this. If we ignore it, it'll go away tomorrow. If I react to it, it'll be on the front page from this day forth. And the university can't afford that. It's not in the university's interest. I said, I'll just tuck in the back of my marine. Maybe someday an opportunity for me to refute it. I said, perhaps the best thing that will refute it is what happens from this point on. That's the way we left it. But this happened too. Any time when there was a void, you had that problem. And we had another problem too. It seemed that perhaps this is true in the academic world more than others. The longer the length of time it takes to fill a position, the less likely you are to get the top candidate, because individuals somehow assume that there's something wrong with the position, rather than that you are looking for the best you can find. And to assume there's something wrong with the position is immediately the wrong thing, because then it narrows down to lesser people, the field of people that you have to consider. And we went through that experience in the university twice. First getting Tom Hamilton, and the second time
Sam Gould.
Winding up with Sam Gould.
And at Stony Brook.
And at Stony Brook.
And at Duane.
Yeah,
I was, as I remember it, I joined the university system in the central office as executive dean on detail down to Stony Brook for a year until I could find a president. I think that's the way it went.
This was subsequent to Lee.
Yes. Yeah. Oh yes. This was the fall of '62.
Yeah.
And Hamilton had come down and met with the faculty, and then Porter was given the assignment of trying to run Stony Brook. The Lee question was the thing that split the faculty, and also made the students anti-administration. And that's what I found when I came in.
And the students were pro-Lee, were they?
The students, no. The students were pro-Austell.
Okay.
And Olson. And they were anti-Lee. There was a group of faculty, the early faculty that Olson had brought in from Chicago. Olson came from Chicago. And a group that came from Columbia. The group from Chicago were interested in a divisional organization. Social sciences, and humanities. Many of them in the humanities. The group that came in subsequently, or the science people, were oriented in a departmental, toward the departmental division of the organization. And then you had the engineering people. But engineers and philosophers are poles apart in their thinking. I had to deal with that. Just what happened, why Olson was let go by Lee, I don't know. Fred Olson, as I understand it, had recommended Lee as dean of the graduate school and had made such a good recommendation to Hamilton and the trustees. Well, why don't you appoint Lee as president of the Oyster Bay campus? And he was. And then the two fell out for some reason. I'm not sure.
I know. I'm not sure either. I don't call that far. Back one time earlier, you asked me about the formation of the State University Construction Fund.
Yeah.
When we were having all this difficulty with the DPW and the concerns that we had, we wanted very badly to get out from under the DPW. And it was at the same time that in the discussions that I had with the governor's office, the question of tuition was raised. And Al Marshall, who was then the governor's secretary and his man in charge of relationships with the various state departments and agencies, asked if the state university would be willing to institute tuition if the money were to be used to pay the debt service on obligations, borrowing obligations, used to finance the construction of the state university buildings under a vastly accelerated program. We already had tuition for some programs. We had no tuition for teacher education on the ground that that was a teacher education was a program which was required to provide the teaching fodder for the consumption of the secondary school systems in the state of New York, and therefore it ought not, students ought not to pay for that purpose, which you could argue one way or another about. At this point, I said I would agree to undertake to sell tuition to everybody if we had certain other things that we could agree to as well. And one of them, of course, would be freedom from all the problems that we had with DPW in getting buildings done and getting approvals made and getting architects appointed, etc. And so it turned out subsequently that the development of another agency to serve as the construction arm of the university, namely the State University Construction Fund, was appropriate to the method of financing which was going to be used through the sale of housing finance agency bonds. And we then had the two things in our grasp. We were asked to propose the kind of a arrangement that we thought would work. And subsequently, what came out of it was basically in line with what we talked about, what we were recommending in terms of the construction fund. But we didn't, it went beyond what we envisioned. We envisioned it to have to be more in the control of the state university itself, not separate from the university as it turned out to be. Over a period of time, for some years, the construction fund and the university from time to time found themselves in an adversarial position. In which the tail wanted to wag the dog. I remember more than once emphatically trying to bring to people's attention that the state university was the people who should be concerned and the consumer, and we were going to decide what it is we wanted to have. And I didn't give a damn what the construction fund felt was their mission in life, etc.
He worked for the university.
Yeah, all the time. Frequently, this question would come up in terms of design, and expense, budget for buildings, and so forth. And what the campus wanted to have and what we wanted to have, vis-a-vis what the construction fund wanted to have.
I don't know if it worked out.
Not well at all. Not well at all. Not well at all. I'd be candid to say that I did not have high regard for Ed Melfi. For reasons that are not personal, for reasons that are related to his relationship with the first construction fund the leader, whose name, as I recall, was Traub, General Traub.
Yes.
I didn't like what occurred.
Traub was one of the three, wasn't he?
Traub was the head of it. He was not one of the trustees of the fund. He was the head of it, and in my judgment, people made a serious effort to get him removed from the position. As a matter of fact, my cooperation in doing this was soft, and I refused. So I had to. I just didn't like him. When you have an individual, and Melfi was a very, very, was an individual who aspired to bigger and better things. When you have an individual who is ambitious for their own particular program vis-a-vis what the university might want, you're bound to have conflict. And this is the kind of conflict that exists in the kind that we dealt with in more recent years. it has gone by the board through the removal of some of the principals that are involved. And I think that
would you say that about Dudley? George?
George? Not to that extent. No, George is a very, very capable individual. I think that he too envisioned that the university's the construction fund should be its own autonomous sort of agency, and that it was capable of making all these decisions for the university. And I don't think George had the same thrust in his making his opinions public as did Adamowski. George and I disagreed on basically on whose authority was involved and basically on and how much money we were going to spend. I took the posture to look at I was the guy that sold this program. I had to face up to presidents of the university colleges and convince them that they should support tuition in the state university, because it was going to enable us to provide university facilities, and they were going to have to swallow very hard in some of the tradition that tuition was used for faculty salaries, not for making seats available for kids to sit in. I said, we don't have the seats for kids to sit in, you're not going to have any faculty, and if you don't have any faculty, you're never going to have to worry about faculty salaries. So I said, let's start with the ABCs of this matter. And I said, therefore, having been the individual who went on the line to sell it and persuade people that this was the thing to do and the way to go, I was not going to sit by as long as I could speak and let funds be used for, in my judgment, extraneous things, frills of architecture or extra architecture rather than fundamental construction. We can't use that. We got to make our money go as far as we can make it go. I remember one incident that pops in my head was at Fredonia, where the construction fund had appointed an architect by the name of I.N.P.E.I. And an outstanding Oriental architecture. I think he may have been Japanese, but I'm not sure. Pei, who came out of the Boston area, and he was a highly successful architect, And he was the type of architect that the fund liked to recruit because they liked to point to the, dramatically to the big names they were associating with. Al Anfredonia designed some particular facility that, in my judgment, was had more architecture in it than it needed to have to do the same thing. And I remember kind of facetiously saying that I disapprove of it, I disagree with it. I said, sir, I would respectfully suggest to you that your name may be paid, but I'm the guy who's paying. And we don't like it. Well, it was quite to do about it. Parenthetically, I was chuckled to myself when I saw on national television back in July when they, was it July when we dedicated the rededication of the Statue of Liberty, when the United States honored four or five very distinguished citizens who had contributed so much in their field, etc. One of those so honored was I.N. Pei. And I smiled to myself and said, well, he probably deserves it, but in my opinion, he didn't deserve to achieve it.